Good evening, everyone. I'm going to call this meeting of the Board of Directors to order. Today's Wednesday, July 2nd. And as usual, we will start with our Pledge of Allegiance. And I'm going to ask Director Weigander to lead us this evening in the Pledge of Allegiance.
You please rise. Please repeat after me. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
Roll call, Director Amezcua.
Present.
Director Bilodeau.
Present.
Director Green.
Here.
Director Jung.
Present.
Director Meeks. Director Nguyen.
Here.
Director Sheldon.
Here.
Director Tran.
Here.
Director Weigand.
Here.
Director Yeo.
Here.
You do have a quorum with nine directors present.
Great. Director Meeks texted me that she's going to be a few minutes late, so she'll be here. Mr. General Manager, are there any items received too late to be agendized?
There are none.
Great. Now's the time for visitor participation. Would anybody from the public like to address the board? Any items at this time that are within our jurisdiction? Seeing none in the chamber or online, we'll move on. That brings us to the consent calendar, which consists of items 1 through 3. What is the pleasure of the board?
Move the consent calendar.
Second.
Motion. Second. Oh, great.
Okay, sounds like Director Yeo seconds. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
Roll call, Director Amezcua?
Yes.
Director Bilodeau?
Yes.
Director Green?
Yes.
Director Jung?
Aye.
Director Nguyen? Director Nguyen?
Yes.
Director Sheldon?
Yes.
Director Tran?
Yes.
Director Weigand?
Yes.
Director Yeo?
Yes.
Okay, that motion carries with 9 yes votes, with Director Meeks absent.
Great. That brings us to informational items. First item is item 4, which is an update on research and development activities.
Yeah, Mr. President, Dr. Megan Plumley will give an update on recent research activities.
Do I need to speak into the mic, or is it picking me up? Do I lean forward, or do you think it's okay?
I'd pull it towards you, yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good evening. So tonight I'd like to give you an update on what we're working on in the R&D department. So I'll highlight a few projects. So a couple months ago, we issued our usual twice summary report, but that has, 1 to 2 paragraph summaries about our currently 22 different programs and projects. So if you ever want a little more detail, you can look at that report. It has a couple bullets about what we worked on in the last 6 months coming. So as projects finish up, they come off the report and new ones get added. In the report, I highlight some as programs and some as projects. So I've never really kind of talked about the difference in this presentation. So I thought I'd just mention that to say that, the programs are ones that are really sustained efforts over the long term. And I'll show you what I mean. There's 4 programs on the next slide. And our projects are like research studies that typically have a life of 1 to 3 years to investigate something. So for the programs, So we have 4 current programs. The 3 in red, blue, and green are ones we've had for a very long time. And then in the orangish yellow is PFAS, so that's a bit newer. But in the red and blue, these are our programs to test membranes for the GWRS plant that could be installed into either the MF ultrafiltration UF facility or the osmosis. So when new products come onto the market that are commercially available, we try them out if we think they could be a good fit for our plant, see how they perform, and then ultimately they may be recommended for getting bids for procurement. And then in the green box, that's the anti-scalant that we use for the RO process. There's new products coming into the market now and again, and so we have a program to trial different anti-scalants that we could feed continuously into the full-scale RO plant. On the PFAS side, and I'll talk about that more later in the slides, but this is our program to continually trial new types of PFAS removal medias that come into the market, which could potentially be installed into the full-scale producer PFAS treatment plants. So those are the programs, meaning it's just an effort that we sustain as new products come into the market to trial them. On the project side, don't worry, I won't go through all the details, and it's pretty simple in here. But we have several different projects ongoing at any given time in the R&D department. I went through an exercise recently of kind of binning them into different categories, and some themes emerged, so I thought I'd highlight that. So what we're working on now ranges from, you know, PFAS projects to, in the orange there, you know, digitalization smart water projects, so things like dashboards and machine learning models, digital twins, and the green studies related to membrane performance in the potable reuse facility, GWRS, and then groundwater recharge topics, and then finally projects related to water quality and especially like regulatory compliance for potable reuse. So those are the themes across the department currently. So we chose three programs or projects to talk about today, just a couple few slides on each. I want to share with you the results from a software dashboard that we trialed that could be used in the reverse osmosis facility. Talk about our ongoing testing of a new type of UF or ultrafiltration product, and then our ongoing PFAS work to pilot treatment medias. Okay, so we recently completed, in collaboration with our operations team for the plant, a trial of an online dashboard, which is a software as a service, commercially available product, specifically for reverse osmosis. This company, Panny, is a Canadian startup company that offers this platform, and they've gotten a lot of recognition lately for their RO dashboard. It's been used mostly on the industry side for RO facilities, had a lot of success with clients, and they're really interested in coming over into the municipal space and seeing if their product can provide some value. And we've long been interested in potentially having a dashboard, a software data analysis program or viewing program for the RO facility. And so the features that we trialed as part of this, basically visualizing the real-time or near real-time data about how the RO plant is functioning. So how do we do it currently? You know, the operators have their SCADA system, the supervisory control and data acquisition, like control program, and there's ways to like export the data that's in the historian to Excel and make plots. But that's kind of a manual process and takes a lot of time and staff like emailing each other results and having periodic meetings to look at it. So the idea here is, imagine you just log into your computer and it's all right there, all the data, all the plots, and it's being just updated on its own. Kind of like magic. that's what it seems like to me, because I don't know how to make the dashboard. It involves a lot of programming. But you can't just take an off-the-shelf product. It really has to be customized to your facility. So that's what we went through in this journey. We basically set it up so that the data from 9 of the 27 full-scale artists feeding data to this dashboard. And it provides not only the data plots, but like insight. You can get alerts to tell you that maybe some value is approaching a critical point and you may want to take a look. So kind of obvious, but this really involved engaging the operations staff, right? So it couldn't just be the R&D team messing around with this dashboard. We really needed to involve who the end users would be, which is the operators, and get their input and feedback. Here's some example views quickly of what it looks like. Just lots of time series data. And it's almost like a dashboard making tool, because you can make your own views of data you're interested in. Here's some more screenshots. Ultimately, we concluded, actually, we won't be adopting this particular dashboard beyond the pilot phase. We learned a lot, and the Panny team learned a lot. It was a great collaboration, but just not a great fit for us. A few concerns listed there on the slide: that we found it to be a bit cluttered. You might have gotten that sense from those screenshots. There was some slow performance, kind of unintuitive at times. A lack of transparency, because, you know, the tool makes recommendations about what you should do next, but not always clear about what it's basing that on. We don't really like that black box sense for it. We need to really understand. And the operators didn't have a strong sense that there was a lot of real operational value as far as kind of integrating it into their work and what they do now. And it did have some alarm fatigue issues, where it's like telling you too many things too often and you start to ignore it, which can be bad if the alarm might be an important one. So you don't want your operators to get alarm fatigue. So ultimately, it wasn't a good fit for us, but we'll keep communication going with Panny. And if they, you know, have a future If it evolves to something that may be more useful to us in the future, we can consider it. All right, so the next project I want to talk about is our ongoing testing of a Toray ultrafiltration membrane product that we could consider for installation into the plant. So this is part of the program I mentioned where we're always trialing new types of membranes. The microfiltration or ultrafiltration, depending on which cell, is the first step of our treatment process for the potable reuse facility. It's a low pressure membrane compared to the high pressure of RO that comes next. So this is our ongoing program to trial different UF products. UF is kind of like the newer version compared to the MF microfiltration. Based on prior piloting work the R&D did, and then later a full-scale test led by the engineering department, an Evoqua ultrafiltration product was the one selected for the final expansion, those new cells that got put in. So those operate today alongside the pre-existing basins that still have the microfiltration type of product. So it's kind of a hybrid plant. So you see us writing, you know, MF, UF, that's why. But, you know, those full-scale UF cells with the Evoqua product, they've kind of been exhibiting elevated feed pressure. So it's taking more pressure to push the water through the membrane than we originally would have liked or anticipated, which means they're fouling fairly rapidly. And if this, you know, worsens over time, it could affect the plant's ability to reach the water production targets. So you can see why it remains of interest to just be aware if there's maybe better products coming on the market you may want to trial. Because potentially when, you know, a membrane or set of membranes ages out, you could put in a different product in its place. So we're trialing at pilot scale, and the pilot is shown there on the left picture, a Toray product. On the right, you can see the module itself. The one in the black sleeve is the Toray product. What's nice about this particular UF membrane is that it's directly retrofittable to the plant, so we could potentially put it right into those Evoqua UF cells if the performance looks really good. And we are getting good pilot data so far, so it looks really promising. We're going to collect some more data, and then we'll meet with Mehul and his team to talk about, you know, would the district like to go forward with a full-scale test in one basin, which is kind of the approach we took before with considering, you know, put it in one basin first instead of maybe all of them. So that's the status of that project. And then the last project I want to brief you on is, which I've spoken about before in these presentations, is to update you on the PFAS pilot that's now, for as part of our media testing program, that's now been moved to the Yorba Linda Water District. So quick background, this is the program that we started back in 2019 to trial different medias. The pilot was previously located at our field headquarters site, and the findings from the first phase of testing were the basis for choosing, you know, what's the better performing media to put into, and also considering cost to for the producers to consider for their full-scale, you know, treatment plants for PFAS. So, for example, on the ion exchange side, the Evoqua PSR2 plus ion exchange resin is what kind of came out of this pilot testing and has been put into a lot of these plants. So we've maintained several phases now of this program, just trialing different products available on the market. So we've relocated the pilot to the Yorba Linda Water District in partnership with them at their PFAS treatment plant. So the red arrow shows you, the pilot shed is not in this photo, but it shows you where it is, kind of squeezed in near the vessels there behind that building. It's again, this plant is actually really close to the field research lab for the R&D department that's located at our field headquarters in Anaheim. So here's a picture of the beautiful shed on the right that we're very proud of. And the plumbing work just got finished a couple weeks ago for the pilot skid shown on the left. So now we're ready to load in some medias. The larger columns on the left are for granular activated carbon, and the smaller ones for ion exchange or other novel medias. And we're going to add a second skid. And some nice news to report is that we recently were awarded a research grant that will help, that will, you know, provide funding for this project. We submitted a proposal to the Water Research Foundation for their tailored collaboration program. And we were awarded $200,000 in funding to the district and our research team partners. And that includes a $50,000 contribution from Tucson Water, who's facing PFAS issues of their own and is really interested in the specific research topics of this study. And then the state of California, State Water Resources Control Board Division of Drinking Water, is also covering the costs for a lot of the sort of emerging PFAS analytical methods we're going to use, because they're going to allow us to send our samples to their laboratory partner that's been doing this work for them in a different program. So there's kind of two parts of this project. The first objective is what I talked about, like this longstanding effort to really see, are there medias out there that are, you know, commercially available and maybe better performing or better value, that we can establish the PFAS removal and the media life, and then the producers can consider it for possible future installations when media ages out and has to be replaced. But while doing that testing, we can layer on some really interesting research questions, and that's why the Water Research Foundation was interested. So the goal there is to trial use of these novel PFAS measurement methods, which indicate a more broad spectrum occurrence of PFAS. So this next slide is my last slide, just to tell you a little more to explain that. So the shorthand is just to say total PFAS. The state uses the term broad spectrum PFAS. So the idea is, if you use this method that's adsorbable organic fluorine, or AOF, you're estimating the total organic fluorine. So you would be picking up PFAS and really any other organic molecule that has fluorine atoms in it that absorb in the test. So you can infer that the total organic fluorine signal is total PFAS. On their list of methods for broad spectrum PFAS, the state also is interested in a method for ultra short chain PFAS. So like PFOA and PFOS, that are the regulated compounds we talk about, have a longer chain, but there are these shorter chain PFAS as well that is getting increased interest in kind of the regulatory space and academia research. And then also a method called non-target suspect screening PFAS that lets you kind of find unknown PFAS. We also want to look at a PFAS bioassay that measures biological activity caused by PFAS, and then compare this to results from like more conventional targeted PFAS analysis using standard methods for the regulated compounds. So since we'll be measuring what's coming in to the pilot columns, which is the Yorba Linda plant influent groundwater to their PFAS treatment facility, and what comes out of the pilot columns, so the removal of PFAS by these different medias, we'll get a sense for not only conventional PFAS removal, but also emerging PFAS groups. So to our knowledge, there's really no other research on this to date that's assessing the ability of these sort of traditional mature PFAS treatment medias to remove more broad spectrum PFAS. So with that, if there's time, I'm happy to take questions. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kathy.
Why are you doing the pilot studies on the activated carbon? I thought we only had like one of them.
Right.
And we don't do much of that. Most of ours is the resin, correct?
That's true. So we do have, I think, is it just one GAC Fullerton plant? So it is less representative of the overall picture. Yes. Yeah. So for our first phase of work, we're actually going to look at a couple of the best performing GACs that we looked at before and the best performing ion exchange, and kind of benchmark, because this is a new site being at the Yorba Linda with that well. So we want to see if the performance is similar. And then in the other skid, we're going to look at other types of medias.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I got a question.
Director Meeks has her hand raised.
Director Meeks, go ahead. If you can unmute, please.
Okay, thank you. I don't have a question. I just wanted to praise the whole organization, and especially R&D, for the work that they do here. There's so many organizations that just kind of believe what the salesperson says and, you know, pick and choose their technology based on that. But to really scientifically delve in to these R&D projects and determine whether or not they're suitable for OCWD, or, you know, like you talked about Tucson and the broader region. I think that's a real benefit that the organization's providing. So thank you. Thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Great. Director Tran.
Yeah, just to tag on to what Director Meeks were saying, I'd like to get your input or comments on the relevance or on the projects that you're working on. And these are multi-year projects, obviously, and it's very esoteric and complicated at times. And I'm trying to find that bridge or the gap between research mm-hmm. in the lab and all the chemicals and all the formulas that you're working on, and how do you apply that in real life? Now, obviously, we are a service agency. Since we're providing water, it's good. My academic side said that we should do research development, like you're at the university, you got to publish and also do a lot of research. How do you take the results, okay, and try to apply it in real life in practical for practical purposes? And on top of that, you have a dynamic of or an environment that you have to deal with so many stakeholders or regulators mm-hmm. that basically oversee or regulate this industry. Say if you invent or you found out about a new way method of reverse osmosis or whatever issue that you're working on, how do you basically take that new discovery or new invention, if you will, and turn it into reality with all the regulations and all the permits and applications that you have to go through. So I haven't heard a lot about that.
Yeah.
I hear the research. I hear the progress in terms of rubber on the road or rubber on the ground, so to speak. Exactly. How do you get there?
I think you hit the nail on the head, really, because our R&D team really operates in that space between R&D that's happening in academia or at startup companies and technology developers with real world implementation. And there aren't a lot of groups in that space, and that space is sorely needed to be invested in, because how do you get across the valley of death, you know, from kind of the idea stage and proof of concept and bench work to really making a difference to save money, reduce chemicals, improve public health outcomes? So, you know, I guess the short answer would be that we look, a big role that we play as an R&D team is trialing and piloting things and providing the real world utility perspective to the technology developers, whether it's a university with a new type of PFAS absorbing, you know, resin that's can be regenerated and they think will be really cost effective, or like a startup company like Panny Energy with their, you know, artificial intelligence, you know, dashboard, for example. And they really value our perspective being a real utility and being able to turn something into something we can actually use. So even oftentimes we may go through an effort and it doesn't mean we implement something or put it into the plant, but we've done our due diligence to explore and understand. And then that technology developer takes that knowledge away and makes the product better.
But that begs the question in the sense that, okay, you're at the forefront, the spear of the of industry, or so to speak, on the issues that we're confronting, whether it's PFAS or other issues that's going to come down the road. And you mm-hmm. you did your, as you call it, due diligence and the research, and you got tons of data. And maybe this is for the management to answer. How do you, and this is where I think, you know, lay folks or policy folks like us on the policy side are more interested in the sense that, okay, how is that practical? How is that applied? Whether it's regulations, laws. Now, say if you invent a new way to toast white bread, okay, do you need a permit? I mean, do you need to check in with OSHA or with EPA for that? I don't know. I mean, I'd like to know.
Yeah, I could give one example.
Well, let me just add, if you add up what we spend annually in membranes, in chemicals, in power. I think the number is around $60 to $65 million a year just to operate the plant out back.
Right.
So we're looking at Megan's group to find better chemicals to use, better membranes to use, membranes that less power. We spend $2.5 million a month on power. And if we can find more efficient membranes that use less power, then there's potential for big savings from the type of work she's doing. So that's a big part of Megan's job is looking for those efficiencies. And
so you don't need to check in with the overseers or the regulatory agency.
You need to make sure they're okay with new membranes we might want to use, but they look to us, you know. They really look to us, and if we can prove it's a better membrane, then they'll permit it. Yeah.
One quick regulatory example, just to kind of illustrate how that process actually works, is our molecular biologist in our team has been working with one of our regulatory affairs staff to develop a test plan to improve our regulatory compliance for pathogen removal in the soil aquifer treatment step that comes after we make this purified water and put it into the ground. So in that scenario, we wrote a whole test plan to measure the decay rate of viruses underground. And DDW has reviewed it, Division of Drinking Water, and given us all their comments. And now we're incorporating their comments into our plan, and then we'll implement this study. And we may be able to show that we can get greater regulatory credit towards our treatment process. And if we can set this example, other utilities may follow because it may establish an approach for a certain sort of issue within the potable reuse space, which is trying to get enough credits to meet this really high bar of required virus removal. So that's just an example where every project's so different. So that's just one where we're actually working really closely with our regulators. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Another, Mr. Toy, do you have a question, sir?
President Bilodeau, this is Mark Toy. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to give Director Tran the producer's perspective since I was listening here and how excited we are to be part of the pilot project. You know, as you know, we had our first one of the first PFAS plants. We have 22 vessels. 2 fiscal years ago, we changed out the resin on 4. Last year, we did 8. This next year, coming up, 10 to get to our 22. And so we've seen costs rise significantly. And so as we share that maintenance cost with OCWD, it's really important for us to see if there is better resin that actually can help us. We've been really excited about the results that we've gotten thus far and the fact that our resin has lasted a long time. But now we're getting to a stage now that we're operating a lot and we're really trying to get these lessons learned. One of the things that we found, as you all know, the unintended consequence of removing PFAS, we've also removed manganese too. So if there's room in the pilot study to kind of take a look at that, because it's using up space for our resin where we're going to have to scrape it off the top. So I just think that, you know, the fact that we could be part of this pilot and see it firsthand, we do a lot of infrastructure tours. Director DeRoche is on this call. She's done a great job of doing that with our service area, and people ask about this, and now we can talk about the things that we're doing in partnership with OCWD to kind of give them an idea of how we're trying to save money for them in the long run. So there's really great utility for the producers, one of your producers out here, and we really appreciate what Megan and her team are doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Director Sheldon has a question.
Thank you, Mr. President. So, Megan, I really appreciate, you know, the desire and all the effort on, I'll say, you know, maybe it's not the best way to slice white bread or toast it, as Director Tran said, but using that analogy, if we come up with that, do we have the copyright, patent, or trademark on that, or how does that work?
I would say we're not typically in the role of invention, so it just doesn't come up. I kind of see the technology developing companies, the startups, the R&D departments of big established firms like Xylem or the Veolias. So we're less in the business of invention and patents, I would say, in our R&D team. We're more in the find the best fit for real water agencies role.
Well, it feels to me you are in the business of inventions, and I mean that in a positive way, that you're looking to reinvent what we're doing and make it more efficient, and that's tweaking a
I suppose
formula
we're
or.
inventing maybe newer approaches, but we don't have to patent that, just
You can trademark that, but I'm not a lawyer of neither. I'm a lawyer of neither, nor am I a lawyer. But I just put it out there to consider that if that is looking to come up, we, you know,
Right.
if you create a lot of good, there's no reason why our ratepayers that are funding this shouldn't benefit from it.
Sure,
That's my
that
comment.
makes
And
sense.
then, you know, have we hit any real silver bullets? I'll say great, where we've, you know, successfully increased our efficiency or reduced our costs. I know you mentioned something regarding the regulatory process and how we may be able to overcome something there, but that's kind of what I'm looking for is if when have we just hit it out of the park that you can take credit for that you can state and take credit that occurred.
Oh, I remember getting a much better anti-scalant
Yeah.
that saved us a lot of money.
Yeah, that's one of our classic examples was antiscalants can be a very high cost area for the district, so trialing antiscalants. But PFAS is a very similar one. The media that we tested, PSR2 plus, we found that it, lasted the longest, and that really translates into significant O&M cost savings. So it's a good investment to do this testing up front.
John, do you recall the annual savings from that anti-scalant?
I see Mayhol is on the line. I remember close to $1 million a year.
Yeah, it was $1 million a year, if you can hear me.
Thank you, Mayhol. Yeah.
That's going to buy a lot of goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on the PFAS issue, I think I might have not heard you correctly. I might have misunderstood what you said, but could you repeat what you talked about the lesser chains and what's really PFAS is eradicated in our process and what's not eradicated? I heard you make some. I thought I heard something, but I probably misheard it.
No, you did. You didn't mishear it. I spoke about how kind of the conventional PFAS that we evaluate are the ones that are regulated right now, which makes sense. It's these longer chain or kind of mid-chain length compounds. So there's a relatively short list of regulated PFAS in drinking water, and then a list of maybe 30 compounds on the standard EPA method that gets used to measure them. But there first was research interest, but now there's interest on the part of regulators in other types of PFAS, and we categorize those as the broad spectrum total PFAS as measured by AOF, adsorbable organic fluorine, and then also the ultra short chain PFAS. So DDW in California is interested in those compounds and has already started efforts to measure the occurrence of these compounds in different drinking source waters around the state. And that's why they had already really worked on establishing the analytical methods to really dial that in through a commercial laboratory partner. And that kind of piqued our interest. And so we wanted to layer in exploring removal of those compounds via the media treatment in our pilot program.
That's a lot for me to digest. So I may want to follow up with you and give a big 4th of July gift to my colleagues on the board there, and I'll reserve my questions for later. So thank you for that information, and thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Director Yeo.
Yes, thank you, President Bilodeau. And Megan, thank you for the presentation. And I also want to thank General Manager Toy for his comments and our staff's continued support and collaboration with your Olinda Water District in developing innovative ideas and being good steward of public funds. So Megan, my question is regarding the pilot that you did not select the dashboard. So it looks like it's collecting a lot of information, and I suppose that we were looking for data to help us fine-tune perhaps the interval of replacing the membranes and the performance, right? Isn't a lot of information, a lot of data good for us? And perhaps we could utilize AI to help us, you know, identify what would be the optimal settings.
Yes. I think We've long been interested, and Mehul can speak to this if he wants to add anything, but we've long been interested in seeing if we can find a kind of a good dashboard for the RO facility or even the plant at large. Just kind of the way the workflows are done now is a little bit clunky. As you know, SCADA is a good control system and good for the operators to view what's going on in the plant. But it's more of a challenging workflow to kind of get the data out and get it visualized so that a group can come together in a meeting and use human intelligence to make a decision and talk about the data. So the idea with dashboards, which are kind of all the rage in other industries and now coming over more into the water sector, is kind of having information and data at a glance so that you can make more informed, you know, data-based decisions. And so, you know, it's pretty simple, really. It's just imagining having all the various relevant parameters already plotted for you and updating on its own in real time instead of having to do it in a program like Excel. But a lot of the companies developing these things are figuring out how to incorporate.
Oh, lost you there.
We lost the.
Yeah, it looks like we lost the feed.
Yeah, we're.
Oh, not sure if you're still hearing me.
Yeah,
we can hear you
back now.
I thought it was me. Okay.
Actual.
We lost the.
All detainees are provided with proper meals.
But yeah, hopefully that answered your question. I lost my train of thought a little bit there. But next week I'll talk a little bit more about our next adventure because we're not giving up the quest yet for a dashboard, and we're going to be trialing another one soon.
Oh, okay. So it's you're still pursuing something, but that particular product is just not a right fit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Great. Are there any more questions? Dr. Plumley, thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
That brings us to item 5, which is the SOPA update. Director Jung and I participated in the SOPA meeting yesterday, which was held out at the Western Municipal Water District in Riverside. We had two exciting items. One was actually we voted on a contract to have an interim general manager, which was the current CFO, Karen. So she'll be running the show there for a bit. And then also we participated in a thrilling 2-hour closed session to interview law firms as it was time to test the market for legal counsel. And we decided to stick with the same legal counsel that they currently have. So that was a big step. Exciting. Also, I wanted to note, so that's the SOP update. Are there any committee conference meeting reports? Item number 6. I don't think we have the regular lineup tonight. So does anybody like to report on anything that they participated in? Okay, hearing none. VOBA reports, the president's report. I wanted to note that this is Bruce Dozier's last regular meeting with us this evening, until he goes over to the other side of the aisle to become a gadfly. Oh, we haven't had a good gadfly in a while, so good. Oh. That's good. So,
heck, too. That's even bigger.
Yes, exactly. And it says here, I need to appoint the GDRS Tour and Ad Hoc Committee members. Director Wygan and Director Jung had both emailed me to indicate they had some interest. Anybody else want to be on the Ad Hoc Committee that will help formulate the GWS tours and collateral materials?
I will.
Okay, Director Green. I have some thoughts on it, so I would like to serve. Do we have a fifth? Anybody else like to delve into that?
I'll volunteer.
Okay, so I think that's 5, which I think is probably our fill. So that'll be the 5. Myself, Director Green, Director Wygan, Director Jung, and who did I miss?
Director Yeo.
Yeah, duh. Okay, so that's 5. So that will be the appointment. And I wanted to wish you all a happy and safe 4th of July. Firework sales are now legal in the city of Orange if you have any disposable income. So anyways, that'll bring us to the general manager's report.
Dude, you got to be careful where you light it.
No, you come from, it's legal at my home, so it's always at my house.
Two items, Mr. President. Just a reminder that we did cancel tomorrow's Legislative Communications Committee meeting, so don't show up for that. And then I wanted to mention we got some good news from OCTA. As the board's aware, we're working closely with OCTA and City of San Clemente on removing sand from behind Prado Dam. And OCTA had some different options to look at of where they would find sand and then move it down to the beach area. But OCTA did an analysis and concluded that our site was the most economic site of all the options they had. So that was good news, and I think they'll be bringing it to their board in the near future here. So that was good to know.
Is that, even though it's a small amount?
They took that into consideration. Yeah, they need more sand than we have.
Right.
But over years, over time, maybe we can give them more sand. I'm not sure exactly what their criteria was, but
yeah.
I just, but at least for this first 100 to 150,000, we were the best location. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's great news. That'll actually save us a lot of money.
Yeah.
Due to our obligations to dig the sand out. Are there any director's reports? Seeing none. Do we have a general counsel report?
Alas, we do not. No closed sessions, no general counsel report.
Bummer. All right. Well, thank you for joining us this evening. The meeting is adjourned.